I got down on my hands and knees and went inside this box she was using as a stage. And what happened next is hard to explain. The air was wet. I smelled dirt and mud. There were noises, too. All around me, these crawling, scratching sounds like bugs and voices, a sobbing that could have been my...
The podcast you are about to hear is purely pretend. The stories shared are fictional and voiced by listeners like you. But if you or someone you know is in need of real care or assistance, please seek help from people who actually know what they are talking about. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Dear Murder Street, where my sister and I give you advice on all things paranormal and true crime. We are your hosts, the Carroll Sisters. I'm Meg.
And I'm MK. So Meg knows a lot about things that don't exist.
Okay.
Monsters, ghosts, demons, fairies.
And MK knows how to be mean to me.
Yeah. Okay. Really though. Let's explain why we're qualified to host a paranormal and true crime advice show.
Right. Okay. So we grew up in the 90s on a street where something truly evil went down. A murder street of local legend.
And we lived next door to the murder house.
Right. So in 1977, 13 years before our parents even moved there, John Dearborn murdered his entire immediate family, and then he just disappeared.
Until 26 years later, in 2003, when he was finally caught.
And we were there, because John Dearborn had been hiding next door, in the murder house.
In the walls.
For all those years.
So we grew up with a secret neighbor.
He was a murderer.
And ever since then, ever since our childhood on Murder Street, we've been sort of drawn to other weird and creepy shit.
Or that weird and creepy shit is drawn to us. Which means that over the years, we've found ourselves advising people in the middle of dangerous, extraordinary, unbelievable sorts of situations.
And now, we are here to help listeners like you. Hey, sister.
Hi. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I am ready.
I'm ready to
help someone.
Yes. Here we go. Let's give some advice.
Okay, so today's caller grew up in Las Vegas.
Sin City, baby.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Don't
for you.
Be. It's Sin City.
Okay. And
happens there stays there.
And so he and his friends would just, growing up, they would wander around the strip with all of the Elvis impersonators.
Viva Las Vegas.
Drag queens, brides-to-be, smut peddlers. Those words came out
of
his mouth.
Those words came out of his mouth.
Et cetera, et cetera. He specifically brought up a street magician named Mary Lou.
Who he clearly had a crush on.
Like, yes, it's very sweet. He definitely did.
Very obvious.
He was 13 at the time, and he guessed Mary Lou to be around 16 or 17.
Yep.
And there was, according to our caller, definitely something enigmatic about her, something wondrous.
I would love to be described that way.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But Mary Lou was a runaway. No one knew where she'd come from. Our caller described her as having short bleached hair, long tan legs, sexy, a gap between her teeth.
Like Madonna.
Sexy. And she had two white wings tattooed under each eye, which, let me just say, cool.
I agree. Yeah,
yeah, so, right?
Anyway, Mary Lou had this wooden box that she would stand on and call to passersby, daring them to participate in her magic tricks.
Yeah.
Specifically to crawl inside her box and go... It does sound a little dirty.
It sounds a little dirty.
To crawl inside her box and go somewhere she called the thin place.
Which I am going to tell you all about after we listen to the message. So, like,
mm-hmm.
And I want to do that. So why don't we just, we'll do that now. We'll listen to the message. At this point in the phone call, in the message, in his story, our caller has volunteered to be in Mary Lou's show.
Yes.
Quick side note to clarify just a few things. What our caller is about to describe happened years ago. He was just a kid at the time. Now, he is an adult, a
mm-hmm.
poet,
yes,
and an English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And we like the sound of his voice.
Yes,
yeah.
And his words.
And his words. Very, very pretty stuff. He's a talented fellow.
I agree.
Yeah. So, without further ado, here is our latest message.
There was a big wooden box that she would stand on when she shouted at us, dared us to come see a trick. to crawl inside this box beneath her feet and see, as Mary Lou put it, the thin place. I got down on my hands and knees and went inside this box she was using as a stage. And what happened next is hard to explain. The air was wet. I smelled dirt and mud. There were noises, too. All around me, these crawling, scratching sounds like bugs and voices. A sobbing that could have been my father's. A prayer that could have been in Spanish that might have been my dead grandmother. It was hard to make sense of it, and I don't know how long this lasted before Mary Lou reached in with a warm hand and fake nails and pulled me out. I was buried alive. Sounds insane, but that's what happened to me. I've never told anyone this before, not even the guys who were with me at the time. What do you think? Where did I go when I was inside that box? What is the thin place? Who or what was Mary Lou? Sincerely, let me out.
So, my first reaction to this story was, buried alive. Like, that's a real fear of mine.
Yes, it is a fear of yours. I'm aware of that. I keep that in the back of my mind.
Put a bell above my grave, please, so I can ring it and let everyone know I'm alive.
Okay.
I also want an air tube. I want snacks and water.
Some cheese
balls. I want Wi-Fi. Leave my iPhone, obviously.
None of this matters, because I've already told you, I'm just going to burn your body with acid, like, when you die.
You have said that to me before. Yeah. It's a great idea, because that way I know I won't be buried alive.
It's the greenest option.
That's true. It would be better for the planet than cremating me. So, yeah, thank you.
It's like sisters are four sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this caller, let me out, says he was, this is the reason we're talking about this, he said he was temporarily buried alive,
mm-hmm.
right? And that, like, he could hear his father's voice, who presumably was alive at this point in time.
Yes. It sounded like his father was alive, and he heard him crying.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
But he also heard something that sounded like his dead grandmother praying in Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is weird, you know, because as said, like, she's passed. She's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I have an answer for that.
I also think that I have an answer for that.
Yeah, but I bet mine is, like, more fun and cooler and better.
It's not a competition. We're trying to help someone.
Yeah, I know. Like, we're doing that. This is an advice show first and a competition second, and I'm going to win it.
All right.
We're not a competitive, like, family. It's fine.
In the spirit of fairness, I'll let you go first.
Why, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I will take that. Let me out. One of your questions was, like, you want to know what a thin place is, what the thin place is, because this is what Mary Lou calls, like, her magic box.
Yes.
So it's a term used in Celtic Christianity, so, like, Irish Christianity, Celtic, Irish. Thin places are places where heaven and earth collide. It's as if the veil, right, between the two worlds is thin enough to hear, see, and maybe even go through. Yes, but it has roots from before Christianity came to Ireland. Okay, so truly, a thin place is a divider between our physical world, our physical realm, and the other world, like the dream world.
Mm-hmm.
So in Celtic tradition, this didn't necessarily, like in Gaelic tradition, this didn't necessarily mean heaven. Okay, it could be the afterlife.
Okay,
but for instance, on Samhain.
Samhain. How do you spell that? Just curious.
S-A-M-H-A-I-N.
So there's no W.
No, because it's Irish, and Irish is this, like, gorgeous and endangered, weird, strange language.
Okay, true.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, Samhain.
Samhain.
Samhain is the Irish precursor to Halloween. So there you go. I know I've mentioned this to you at some point.
Probably.
Samhain was a day and night where the boundaries between the two worlds disintegrated, disappeared, allowing beings from both sides to cross over. Is this sounding familiar?
It is.
It's a weak point in the boundaries, so the spirits could come and visit. So, if Let Me Out was in a thin place, as Mary Lou said he was, it makes sense that he might hear his dead grandmother praying.
Sure. I guess right. So.
Since spirits can visit through thin places, especially if it's a day and night, like Samhain.
So, like, Field of Dreams.
Yes. Yes. Is this heaven?
No, it's Iowa.
No. It's a thin place between heaven and Iowa.
Cool.
Yeah. I think so anyway. But in Gaelic tradition, they weren't always friendly, like, from familial spirits visiting from the afterlife.
Like Ray Liotta or Kevin Costner's dad.
No, Ray Liotta wasn't always, like, visiting and, like, or, like, wanting to have a catch with somebody, right?
Okay.
It was rather otherworldly creatures who, more often than not, caused mischief. Like, those are the ones that would visit, these mischief makers. And these would be what we now call fairies.
I'm surprised it took you this long to get to fairies.
Uh-huh.
Meg loves fairies.
I do. I mean, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, I love fairies. Fairies are awesome and often misunderstood as just being, like, small little winged, like, you know, Tinkerbell-like creatures, which is fine. But fairies, like, traditional fairies are, like, the gods and goddesses of Ireland. Like, there are good fairies and there are bad fairies. And more often than not, on Samhain, the bad fairies are the ones that came out, like, of the thin places.
I'm sensing a story coming on.
Your senses, your spidey senses are right.
Okay.
Okay. Like, yes, I'm going to tell a myth.
Okay, go on.
I will. So there is a cave in County Roscommon, known as the Cave of Cats. This is all in Ireland still.
Cats. Okay.
On Samhain, the Morrigan, or the Phantom Queen, leaves the otherworld through this thin place.
Mm-hmm.
She brings various monsters with her, including a three-headed beast, small red birds that kill any plant they breathe on, and mystical wildcats. So hence, the Cave of Cats.
I get it.
Morrigan, the Phantom Queen, and her beasts cause havoc on Samhain.
Okay.
They destroy crops, they kill livestock, and they even kidnap people.
Mm-hmm.
In one story from the 18th century, a woman wanders into the Cave of Cats on Samhain after her cow runs away from her.
Stupid cow.
Yeah, she follows this dumb cow.
Did the cow know that it was the Cave of Cats and not the Cave of Cows?
I'd have to ask the cow,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know.
Okay,
so
tell me more.
So the woman disappears,
okay.
Having been kidnapped by Morrigan mm-hmm. and her beasts. Seven Samhains later. I realized
later.
That. So 7 years later mm-hmm. on Samhain.
Okay.
In a cave north of Roscommon. So this is like miles away, all the way in County Sligo. The woman reemerges unscathed, unaged, as if no time has passed for her.
And the cow?
I don't know about the cow, to be honest. I'm sorry. I'm sure the cow's fine.
I hope so.
Anyway, this woman returns home to her family, who at first are happy to have her back.
Of course.
Yeah, obviously, mm-hmm. totally. But after a few days, they notice some changes in her. For instance, she slept during the day and went out for walks at night. Yeah, a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
She could now drink her brothers and father under the table. She would not go to church. And she was no longer quiet. She was much more chatty and more willing to speak her mind than she once was.
She sounds great.
She really does, though. Mm-hmm. Like, sounds like she'd be a great BF. BFF. Sounds like she'd be a great BFF.
Are you trying to replace me?
You're my sister first, my BFF second.
Yeah.
Anyway, she sounds great, but her family did not like this new version of her.
Okay.
They thought her behavior strange and unlike her, and thought that she may have been spoiled by her time in the other world. So they banished her.
I thought they were going to burn her or something.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that felt kind of, I know, like, there's plenty of that in other myths and stories. But in this case, she was banished. And people say she returned to the Cave of Cats and rejoined those people in the thin place.
Interesting.
Yes. And it's not quite done yet, though. There's more. Another seven Samhains later.
Of course.
So another 7 years on
seven
a Samhain.
Seven Samhains.
This woman's family was found massacred as if by an animal inside their house.
Inside the house.
Inside the house. The doors were all locked from the inside. All the windows were closed. But they were you know, torn apart. Like, there's blood everywhere.
Okay.
And I think it was the cats. That's exactly. Yes, that's totally the noise they made. Yes. Yes, that's I'm loving this. This is totally the sound that the mystical wildcats made as they were, like, massacring, like, you know, their new friend's family.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, there's my story for you. The Irish, especially, like, those who believed in that sort of mythology, right? Like, believed in these thin places, were really careful around strangers and thin places. Generally, if a person disappears into a thin place, it is likely you will never see them again. So, let me out. You were pretty darn lucky, like, not to get stuck there.
I suppose so. It's a good thing Mary Lou pulled you out when she did.
Like, not everybody has a Mary Lou. Eventually, with thin places, just to, like, finish up my point. With Christianity in Ireland, thin places became less a place of danger, magic, and mystery, right? And more a place of prayer and reflection.
I like that.
Which one? Like, the scary one, or?
Both. The danger, okay. Magic, mystery. But also, how a thin place could potentially be anywhere. Am I sort of getting that right?
Yeah. Like, that's the more modern view of thin places. Like, you're not wrong. Originally, you know, they were these sacred spots, these, like, caves, these ancient monoliths. But now, a thin place could be anywhere that a person might find peace or serenity. Like a bar, like a quiet bar in New York City, right? Mm-hmm. Or, like, a field in Iowa, a meadow in Texas, right?
Or a podcast studio.
I mean, like, maybe. For you, I'm not very...
No. It's hot in here.
It's stuffy.
And I don't feel serene.
Yeah.
Our recording studio is a stuffy room in our house, and I sort of hate it. But it's but in all seriousness, I'm digging this.
Cool.
It makes sense to me that secular spaces can also be sacred spaces.
Oh,
I get that.
Oh my goddess. Mm-hmm. MK believes in thin places, everyone. MK believes.
I don't believe in the anthropomorphized version of thin places.
Sure.
I don't believe in fairies. Oh, no. I said it.
No, shut up. Clap.
Clap your
damn hands. Thank you. Because if everybody knows, like, she can't say those words. She can't say that. Or else she kills a fairy.
Is this enough? Have I clapped enough?
No, rest of the episode, you're just going to keep clapping.
No.
All right. I hope everybody else clapped their hands, too. Like, saved that fairy that MK tried to kill. Anyway,
all right.
I'm so upset.
I can see that.
I'm not going to walk out of this room, this stuffy-ass room.
Let me just say, sister, again, this really appeals to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm going over some of my favorite books, TV shows, movies in my head, and a lot of them clearly have drawn inspiration from this idea, the mythology of thin places.
No, sure, totally. I mean, when I first learned of thin places, like, my mind immediately went to Narnia. Like, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Like, specifically the wardrobe being a thin place, right, between Narnia and the human realm. Two of my favorite animated shows, right, Gravity Falls and Trollhunters. You're a fan.
I like them too. Sure.
Have thin places in them. And Hawkins, right, from Stranger Things is another example. There's a thin place.
Yes. One born of science and very dangerous.
Yes. Yes. Very dangerous, like, which brings me back to, like, my main point. So I love discussing thin places as these really beautiful, like, you know, being able to go to a place where you can reflect or prayer that isn't necessarily a traditional place of worship. Like, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Hawkins is a really good example of how thin places can be dangerous. Because we have to remember that if the veil is thin enough that we can see, hear, you know, feel the other world, then someone...
Or something.
Yes, a Demogorgon, you know, on the other side is the other world, like, can as well. And that's scary.
I agree.
Right? Like, I mean, that's... Yes. So anyway, that ends my long answer for Let Me Out. Mary Lou said you were in a thin place. I think that means that you were in the veil.
Okay.
Okay? Let Me Out, you were in the veil. traditionally, thin places in Ireland led underground. Like, the other world slash the afterlife was thought to be literally under the earth, like under hills or beneath caves like the Cave of Cats. So, in a sense, you were buried alive. Ugh. You were between our world and the other world, under the earth. And you're very lucky that you got out.
So, you answered his question as to what a thin place is.
That I did. Pretty well, I think.
Sure. But what do you think Mary Lou is?
I want her to be a fairy.
Of course you do.
But I don't know if she's actually a fairy. Like, she does have the wings, you know, tattooed below her eyes.
Sure. If you can call that evidence.
I'm gonna call it evidence. All right. But I think it's more likely that she's just a magician with real magic that can see the veil, can see thin places better than most.
But she brings this box with her. Do you think she carries a thin place with her? Do you think that's possible?
No. I don't know. I've never read anything.
I've stumped you.
Yeah, kind of. I've never... Okay, well,
that was here. My goal.
I've never... Good for you. You win. I've never read, though. I've never heard anything about that. Like, about, like, to-go thin places. Like, put a to-go box of a thin place. I really am going to stick to my guns. I think she just finds them easily. Like, I think she has, like, thin place radar.
Okay.
Right? Like, she senses them. And wherever she finds a thin place is where she puts on her show. Because she's, like, a bit of a vagabond, right? Like, she's a runaway.
Yeah. All right. I got it.
Okay.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's find you a thin place.
I think I would like that.
Oh, my God.
Very much, actually. Now, would you
Let's
like...
just go to Ireland.
Would you like to hear my thoughts and theories about all of this?
Yeah. Does it take all the magic, like, out of it, though?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yes.
Fun.
Fun. My theory here is hypnotism. I think our friend was maybe hypnotized.
Oh my God, I know why you're doing this.
Yeah, you do.
Are you going to tell? Can we tell the story? Are you
going
to tell the story?
Yes, I'm going to tell the story.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
There's a story. It's a really good story.
I have a personal hypnotism story. I was hypnotized.
Yeah, I was there.
Yes, you were there too.
Yeah.
But
I always have to make it about me.
But you're getting ahead of me.
Sorry.
Let me just explain a few things about hypnotism before I tell that particular story.
Okay, make it quick, though. I love this story. It's an insane story.
That's true. So here's what I learned about hypnosis on howstuffworks.com.
Okay.
First of all, people have been trying to figure out hypnosis for over 200 years. Science, however, has yet to fully explain exactly how it works. Really, hypnosis is still a mystery to us. And of course, that's largely because the human mind is still a mystery to us.
Sure. You know, my mind is a huge mystery to me.
Me too.
That's not nice.
Yeah. Your mind is also a mystery to me.
Not nice.
However, again, all of this is straight from howstuffworks.com. Psychiatrists do understand the general characteristics of hypnosis. Hypnosis is a trance state characterized by extreme suggestibility, relaxation, and heightened imagination.
I like imagination.
Yeah, so it's not really like sleep because the subject is alert the whole time. It's most often compared to daydreaming or like the feeling of losing yourself in a book or a movie. You are fully conscious, but you tune out most of the stimuli around you.
Okay, I get that. That's making sense.
So in the everyday trance of a daydream, an imaginary world seems somewhat real to you in the sense that it fully engages your emotions. Imaginary events can cause real fear, sadness, or happiness. And you may even jolt in your seat if you're surprised by something like a monster leaping from the shadows, the ghost of Shoeless Joe Jackson walking out of a cornfield. Some researchers categorize all such trances as forms of self-hypnosis.
So I'm coming to an unfortunate realization about myself, about my person.
Are you?
Yeah. I think I'm easily hypnotized.
Oh, certainly.
You knew this?
Yeah.
Have you hypnotized me? I mean, to be fair, I'm the one that hasn't been hypnotized here.
That's very true. But yeah. Yeah.
But no, I'm sensing, I'm learning through your research that I am easily self-hypnotized, for sure. Like, because of all the feels.
Definitely.
Like, I feel all the feels. Mm-hmm. Like, last night, I rewatched Coco for, like, the 100th time.
Yeah.
And I sobbed.
Sobbed.
And I sobbed so much that I missed, like, the whole ending and had to, like, rewind it and rewatch and sob again.
Yeah.
Like, it was a vicious cycle.
This is a good example.
It is, though.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But, like, it's also a wonderful example, actually, like, going back to my theory.
Sure,
like, about Thin Place, right? Coco, like, the movie, right? Dia de los Muertos is similar to Samhain. Like, they're around the same time, obviously.
Yeah.
But Dia de los Muertos is a much less scary version. And it's more about family and love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anywho, most psychiatrists focus on the trance state brought on by intentional relaxation and focusing exercises. Under this type of hypnosis, the subject approaches the suggestions of the hypnotist, or even his or her own ideas, as if they were reality. So, for instance, if the hypnotist suggested that there was an ice cube in your mouth, you might start to talk like you had an ice cube in your mouth. You'd also feel the cold. If the hypnotist suggested your hair was on fire, you'd feel the heat and you'd, like, try to put the fire out.
Okay, as a person whose hair is caught on fire, I'm just gonna say I didn't really feel a heat. It was more like a flash on the side of my head and then, like, a really bad smell.
Yes, you
like,
did
just
not.
Just my professional opinion.
Yes, you did not imagine that.
No.
It was a bad birthday.
It wasn't great.
For you.
It wasn't my best moment.
So.
Lots of candles.
Here's the thing. Even while in that type of trance, with the hypnotist working his or her magic on you.
She put magic in quotes.
Air quotes.
Air quotes. Like a bitch.
Even with a hypnotist putting you intentionally under, you know, their spell.
Mm-hmm.
More air quotes. The entire time you are aware that it's all imaginary.
Okay.
Essentially, you're playing pretend on an intense level, as kids do, which means even under hypnosis, you can't be compelled to do anything you don't want to do.
Okay, but Let Me Out didn't seem to be aware that any of it was imaginary. Like, the way he talked about it, it was real. Like, it was real to him.
Sure, but he was still pretty young. He was 13, and this girl, Mary Lou, was an enigma, a kind of legend in his neighborhood. I think at the time he was probably just imagining all of this on a very intense level. So intense that his memory has turned it all into a reality.
Or he was in a thin place the whole time and it was all real.
Sure.
I mean, really, though. But anyway, so just to reiterate, like, in your opinion, Mary Lou is a human hypnotist. No fairies.
Or he hypnotized himself, like the way people do all the time.
Okay. So basically, you're saying it's, like, on his head.
The only magic I see here is the magic that is a child's imagination.
Oh, that sucks. That's stupid. Like, how can you believe that after what happened to you, like, when we were kids?
Hmm.
That was not an ordinary case of hypnotism.
No.
No, it was not. And, like, so now, are you done with your stuff?
With my research?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to insist you tell the story. Everybody, MK has been hypnotized.
Yes, that's true. As
okay.
Promised.
Yes, so let's do this.
I'm going to tell the story.
Do it.
Okay.
You know, this is an insane story, everybody. So just, like, MK, go for it. Tell this story.
So, for those of you who haven't had the chance to listen to the pilot yet, we grew up on a murder street.
Next to a murder house.
Our friend, Adam, he lived there in that house, and the story we're about to tell takes place in Adam's basement. It was his 8th birthday party, and his parents hired a magician. I don't remember the magician's name, like if he had a stage name or whatever.
Yeah, well, as we would come to learn, right, Adam's dad found this guy, like, on the cheap. he was the snake and reptile guy at the PetSmart. He also moonlighted as a musician / slam poet.
He was a very talented guy.
Yeah, he was like a Renaissance man. All right. He had, so he wore a cape.
Yes.
Right? He had a cape and not a lot of hair.
Yeah.
And his voice was like sort of, like whispery, like whispery, you know, it was soft.
Breathy. Yes, I remember that. He was certainly creepy.
Certainly.
And suffice it to say, Adam's mom was not happy about this when she found out.
No.
Because the show didn't go so well, or it freaked us all the fuck out.
I still feel that, like, that's kind of like putting it mildly, but yeah, like, it really fucked us all up.
So, again, we were in Adam's basement, and the show started out the way you might expect any magic show at an 8-year-old's birthday party to go, with magic rings, spinning plates.
Like, he levitated a handkerchief.
Yes. Standard stuff. I remember actually being kind of bored.
Sure.
I thought about going upstairs because I was 10 at the time. I was older than Adam and most of the other kids at the party. So I thought about going upstairs because that's where all of the adults were and older siblings.
And, like, that wasn't something I realized until I was older and I was telling this story to friends. Like, we were left alone in this basement.
Yeah.
Like,
good job,
good
parents.
Good job, parents. Like, they left us with this virtual stranger.
I think about that, too.
Yeah.
A lot. I remember Adam's mom going up and down the stairs a lot. She was setting stuff up for cake and presents. And his dad, I remember this, he was looking all over the house for their video camera.
Okay.
He was really pissed that he couldn't find it. Adam's house was always pretty clean, organized.
Yeah, his mom was always really, like, on point on top of that.
Yes. But shit was strangely, mysteriously always going missing.
Well, yeah. That was because, like, there was a murderer hiding, living in their house with them stealing their shit.
Yeah. This stuff still gives me all the bad chills.
I mean, we could have died, okay.
We were in a house with a murderer.
Like, often.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So, to continue the story, at some point near the end of his show, this magician asks all of us kids if we've heard of Merlin. Mm-hmm. And of course, we were all like, yes, what kid hasn't heard of Merlin?
Yeah, you know, we'd all seen Sword in the Stone.
Great movie.
Classic movie.
Yes. Anyway, so the magician then was like, you only think you know about Merlin. Everything you know about Merlin, the story you've been told over and over again, is a lie.
A lie.
Yes.
And that's when he goes on to tell us the true version of King Arthur's wizard, you know, that none of us had ever heard before.
Yes. According to the magician, Merlin's real name at birth was Ambrosius. Nobody, he said, like, ever talks about the wizard as he was when he was a child. You know about the old man, the wise teacher, maybe you even know about his madness, but the man you know as Merlin was once a boy, a fatherless child, a vulnerable child, magician said, like all of us.
Yeah, a vulnerable child. And that's, I remember he specifically at this point pointed at Adam.
Yeah. That's when he asked Adam, the birthday boy, to be Merlin, to be Ambrosius. But as we've said in previous episodes, Adam sort of scared easy.
Yeah, Adam scared easy, but, like, to be fair, like, looking back at this, he was so right to be scared.
Yeah.
Like, this reptile man / slam poet / musician / magician is calling us all vulnerable children. And, like, you know, where the fuck are
all the parents?
Where the fuck are all the parents at this point?
All right, fair. Okay, true. So Adam didn't want to play along. So his best friend, who was sitting right next to him, volunteered in his stead. I will call him Ambrosius.
Oh, yeah, sure. That makes sense.
Because that's what the magician called him, okay. And we should protect his anonymity.
Okay, yeah. Ambrosius. That's now Adam's yeah. best friend. We did that with Adam. Like, that's not Adam's real name. It's just to protect people's privacy from Murder yes. Street. Okay, so Ambrosius goes up in Adam's stead. And now we're getting to the part where things get really weird.
Mm-hmm.
I promise, like, this does tie into hypnotism.
Yes.
Yes, we're getting there.
Yes, we're getting there. So, the magician has Adam's best friend stand in front of all of us, and he says, "This is Ambrosius, the fatherless child. He is fatherless because," and I wish I could remember the exact words the magician used, "Ambrosius is fatherless because he did not come into the world in the usual way. He was not sired by man. So he weird. Was sired by a demon who had deceived Ambrosius's mother into falling in love with it. So, as a result, in other words, Ambrosius was not all human, or he was more than human, and everybody knew this. Everybody in Ambrosius's village and in his kingdom, it was not a secret that this boy was more than a boy. He was special. And this made Ambrosius's life very dangerous because nobody trusted him. He was blamed for all sorts of things. Various misfortunes that befell the kingdom. Droughts, bad harvests, dead babies, yeah. stillborns. Like, I'm pretty sure that word came out of the magician's mouth.
And, like, I was 7. I didn't even know what a stillborn was. And, like, that's not even the weirdest part. Like, the story's about to get weirder.
Yes. So, to recap and continue. Ambrosius, the boy Merlin, was fathered by a demon. Nobody in the kingdom liked him or trusted him. He was seen as a living omen by everyone, including the king. A warrior king.
Yep, a warrior king. And, this is when the magician asks for another volunteer. So he says, "Now, who wants to be the warrior king?"
And I'm, like, much less bored
yeah.
at this point. I'm into it. I want to be the warrior king.
Do you ever regret that?
I will answer that question mm-hmm. at the end of the story, because I don't want to give it all away.
Okay, that's fair. I will hold you to that, though.
Okay.
But yeah, I remember you were very quick to raise your hand to volunteer, but I, on the other hand, was a little nervous. Like, I was getting a bad feeling from all this.
Understandably. So, anywho, I stand up and join the magician and Ambrosius, and the magician says, "This is the warrior king. His people have been at war for generations. They have been suffering. They have been dying. So he wants more than anything to put an end to all of that. The warrior king does not want to wage war anymore. He tells his priests this, and they tell him, for peace, a sacrifice is necessary. The priests tell the warrior king he must sacrifice a fatherless child."
And I wonder who that might be.
Poor Ambrosius.
Poor Ambrosius.
Yes. And this is when the magician pulled me and this other kid aside. And I guess that's when he hypnotized us.
Well, he said specifically, he told everyone. He's like, "I am going to hypnotize them now."
See, I don't even remember that. It's getting hard to describe. He didn't swing a pocket watch or anything. He didn't tell us to stare deep into his eyes.
Yeah, you didn't get sleepy, very sleepy.
I know, not that I can remember.
Sleepy, very sleepy.
He was just talking to us, calling us by these other names, Ambrosius and Warrior King, and he repeated his instructions a lot. Again, his voice, it was so whispery. That's really coming back to me now.
Yeah.
And so this is where the story gets a bit fuzzy for me. The rest of this story I know only because everybody, Meg and all the other kids at the party, were watching and saw what happened next. You all saw what I did while I was under hypnosis.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard to forget what you did. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. Even though I was 7 and maybe my memory shouldn't be so reliable, it is one of those stories that you have to tell over and over again because it's so weird.
Right. So apparently, what happened next was Adam's best friend and I started telling the story ourselves. as Ambrosius and the Warrior King, we took over the show and were telling the rest of the story.
And the magician, like, was behind the two of you preparing for the magic part, like, for the trick. And he had this empty cage, like a bird cage, and a table that he was setting up.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I'm the Warrior King, and I'm telling this story like I really lived it. So is Ambrosius. These words are coming out of us, but later neither of us would remember any of it. We're saying I summoned Ambrosius, that he came willingly, it appeared, to be slaughtered, because Ambrosius agreed that there had been too much war for the kingdom, and he wanted to help. But he doubted the priests. Ambrosius claimed that spilling his blood would not help. It wouldn't help because his blood was corrupt. Ambrosius was not an innocent.
No, he was a demon's heir.
Exactly.
According to the magician.
And I, the Warrior King, apparently bought this. I believed Ambrosius when he said we needed to sacrifice something else in order to save my kingdom. And he told me I would find what I needed in the woods, that I would know it when I saw it.
Like, okay, sorry, I don't want to, like, throw off your groove here, but it's starting to weird me out that you're using the first person. Like, it's
sorry.
Bringing back memories. Are you hypnotized again? Like, what's going on?
Maybe.
No.
So anyway, the Warrior King, ventured into the woods, and after 3 days and nights, returned with a new tribute to sacrifice.
That she did. The magician has everything that he needs set up. He puts a birdcage, right? He puts this birdcage on the table. Then he makes a big show of removing his cape. He throws it over the cage. He waits a beat. Removes his cape, and, you know, abracadabra, there's a dove in the cage.
Yes. I came back from the woods with a white dove, and Ambrosius says, "One day, I promise, your kingdom will know peace. You may not see it, but your heirs will. Despite my parentage, and because you spared me, I will show them the way." Ambrosius says, "What I'm about to do with this bird is proof that you can trust me and my magic."
Yeah. So at this point, the magician takes the white dove out of its cage and he walks around with it. Actually, I remember I got to pet it. It's like my only contribution to the whole show. But the magician went back to the table and he stood between the two of you. He took his cape and he wrapped it around the bird. He used his cape as a bag and he trapped the dove in there. And I'll never forget this. He said, "This next part is important. Don't scream. Don't make a sound or the magic won't work." And MK, you took the cape from the magician.
Yes. And then I swung the cape over my head with the dove in it and smacked it, slammed it on the table.
Yeah. So MK killed a bird.
Yes.
It was rather terrifying, but I listened to the magician. I did not scream. I did not get up.
Nobody screamed.
Yeah. Nobody did. We were just watching.
Mm-hmm.
MK then unwrapped the bird, this dead bird from the cape.
Mm-hmm. So again, I have no real memory of this, but everybody says I took the dead bird.
Yeah, its feathers were were bloody.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And handed it to Ambrosius. I handed Ambrosius the bird. Then he and the magician started speaking in unison in a different language.
And then, I swear, strange fucking things happened in that basement already. But at this point, it was the light, mm-hmm. or the shadows, I guess. I don't know. It was, every shadow in the room, even my own shadow, flew to where the three of you were standing. Where this boy, where Ambrosius was cradling the dead bird.
And there were sounds.
Yeah.
Everybody who was there has always been able to agree on that part of the story.
Yeah,
there
always.
Was a sound in the basement, like many wings.
Like wings flapping.
Flapping. Many wings flapping. As if there were birds swarming all around us.
And then, like, the dead birds' own wings start twitching and flapping. And the next thing we know, it was flying around the room.
It was alive.
Yeah, it was resurrected. It was magic.
It was a magic trick.
No.
A really good one.
No.
I will give you that.
You killed a bird. And it came back to life in Ambrosius's hands.
Sleight of hand,
Boo.
I think. It wasn't,
Boo.
I don't believe it was the same bird. The magician must have switched the dead one out for a live one somehow.
Okay. Sure. Well, what about the shadows? Like, my shadow, my shadow left me, okay? And the flapping, the sounds.
Sound effects, I assume. Oh. Tricks of the lights. These things can be explained.
You still killed a bird, though. You're a bird murderer. Like, once the bird came back to life.
Bird murderer.
Like, once this bird came back to life and the show was over, like, we all sort of, like, snapped out of it, and I ran to get Mom, because I was like, this is wrong. She lost her shit after I told her what happened, and, like, oh, she and all the other parents chased after the magician, like, chased the magician out of the house. Like, you know, if they had torches and pitchforks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they were not happy.
We also started shopping at Petco,
yeah,
as opposed to PetSmart, where the magician worked.
Yeah, we weren't buying no dog food from PetSmart anymore. Yeah, you know, good for him, good for the magician that, like, this was before Yelp,
I suppose.
Anyway, everyone was pretty shaken up after that, understandably.
Yeah. People were a little weird around me for a while, because, again, bird murderer, I guess.
Yeah. I was always under the impression that since you were hypnotized, right, you had no control in what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But according to what I've learned today,
mm-hmm.
right, according to your,
yes.
your research, you can only be hypnotized to do things that you'd actually be willing to do, right? Isn't that what you said?
Yes.
So, I think you see where I'm going with
I
this.
Do.
I guess my question for you is, did you want to kill the bird?
Apparently?
No.
I think,
don't say that.
I think, here's what I'm going to say. I think I really wanted to play my part. I think I really wanted to be the warrior king. I think, to repeat a phrase I've used before in this episode, I was playing pretend on an intense level. Such an intense level that I convinced myself that I wanted to do that.
That's fucked up.
You're not wrong.
Okay. I think now you have to answer my other question from earlier.
Okay.
Do you regret it, like, volunteering to be the warrior king?
Yes.
Good.
Because I killed something.
Okay, like, this is something, even though, like, you've said this, like, that.
I killed a dove.
You killed peace.
Yeah.
Even though you said, like, you can't be hypnotized to mm-hmm. do something you're not willing to do, I still don't think this is your fault. I'm going to stand by that.
Well, thank you.
I still think that it's magic. And to be, like a boon for me, the kid who played the part of Ambrosius also believes it's magic. Mm-hmm. Like, once the bird was alive again and flying around the room, the two of you really snapped out of your trances and had no idea what had happened. Like, but he went on to see the whole thing very differently than you.
Yes. Ambrosius, that kid, got really into magic after
yeah.
that. It became sort of a singular obsession of his. He became a full-blown magic nerd. And I mean that affectionately.
Sure.
But I'm pretty sure that kid brought his magic cape with him to college.
And I get it. You know, I'm just saying, though, he went through the same exact, well, the same thing, not the exact same thing. Like, he resurrected the bird, he didn't kill a bird. But he went through the same thing you did and came out the other side a believer. Like, it was too extraordinary for him not to believe in magic after that.
I agree
okay.
that it's fucking weird
it.
What happened. But that's hypnotism. I'm not saying hypnotism is not a mysterious art form.
Uh-huh.
I've read that sometimes people do remember what they do in a trance state, especially during cases of self-hypnosis. Now, that's not what happened to me, but it may very well have been what happened to today's caller. Let me out.
I feel like you're stretching, okay? Because, like, Mary Lou was a magician, so...
Okay. Like, so fairies and thin places aren't stretching it.
We're not talking about my theory right now. We're done with my theory. All right. You know, we're not going to agree on this.
Probably not.
We never do. But after thinking about this all again, I'm going to research the shit out of Merlin. Like, I need to find out the truth. Like, was the Merlin I knew a lie, or was he really this demon's bastard child?
I think that would be super interesting.
Good, because it's happening. I'm going
to
do it.
Cool. So... maybe more to come on that in future episodes.
I'm so excited.
Okay, so anyway, let me out. We hope our research, our insights, the story we just told proves useful. If it was hypnotism, you now know someone else it has happened to, me.
And if it was real magic, you now know someone else it has happened to, MK. But really, I hope that the mythology of thin places has helped make sense of things for you.
And if our listeners care to weigh in.
Absolutely.
Was it hypnotism? Was it magic? Or are they, I suppose, one and the same? You know where and how to find us.
Yes, and if you have been to a thin place, like, please let us know. Or if you have been hypnotized, let us know. I want to know.
Yes, please share your stories.
Yes. So this has been fun. It's been weird.
I'm exhausted.
You should be.
From telling that story.
You admitted to being a bird murderer.
I did.
So anyway, until next week, please keep writing and calling.
Okay, bye.
Bye. This episode of Dear Murder Street was written and produced by us, the Carroll Sisters. If you enjoyed this episode, check out our website, DearMurderStreet.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at MurderStreetPod, or find Dear Murder Street on Facebook.
The disclaimer at the start of the episode is voiced by our lovely mom. Her name is Mary.
And she's a star.
Yes, no question.
And our music was written and performed by our very talented friend, the artist and composer, Afro-musician, Arij Bilal.
If you'd like to listen to more of her awesome music, check out SoundCloud.com/Arij Bilal. That's soundcloud.com/ARIG-BILAL.
And Let Me Out is voiced by Andrew Hemmert from Florida.
He's a real poet.
And a good one. You can find his real poetry in the Cincinnati Review, the Greensboro Review, Hunger Mountain, North American Review, Poet Lore, Poetry Northwest, and Prairie Schooner.
Wow, that was a lot.
Yeah.
His work is out there.
It is. It's great.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. So, if you are interested in playing along and pretending with us, there are three ways you can do that.
First, you can call in, leave a voicemail for Dear Murder Street at 845-418-6681.
Or if you'd rather not hear your voice on the podcast, just write in. Send an email to DearMurderStreet@gmail.com.
And finally, if you want to hear your voice but would rather not use your own words, send an email to DearMurderStreet@gmail.com. And maybe we'll send you a letter written by one of us or another fan, a letter which you could read for the show by calling or leaving a voicemail at 845-418-6681.
And by the way, like, that was a lot of information, but it's all available on our website, DearMurderStreet.com. Also, if you have advice for any characters, you know, leave a voicemail, write in, or reach out to us on Twitter at Murder Street Pod or on Facebook.
By calling or writing in, you consent to the use of your voice and or words on the podcast and surrender the rights to any characters or storylines to us, the Carroll Sisters. Whichever stories most scare us, most intrigue us, most entertain us, those are the ones we will choose.
And we can't make any guarantees that you'll have a spot on the show. But really, like, who knows? Maybe you'll create a character people will love.
Or fear.
Or love to hate and fear.
Perhaps your advice will influence a character's decisions and actions in future episodes. In addition, don't forget to subscribe and please like and review us on Apple Podcasts. This will help other people find the show. The more fans we have, the bigger and stranger and more wild this podcast will be.
So, until next time, it's been fun. This show wouldn't be possible without our fans, our friends, our family, your support, your imagination, your very own voices. They are the lifeblood of Dear Murder Street.
Yeah. So
thanks for playing.